Welcome to Alphabet Scoop. I'm your host, Stephen Hall, and we've got a big show in front of us today. I'm joined by my colleague, Abner. How you doing, man?
Hey, awesome as always.
Yeah, it's episode 13, and today is a very special day for the Alphabet Scoop podcast because this is the very first time that we're introducing a guest on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the one and only Francisco Franco joining us today. Hey Francisco. This is he's basically for those who are out of the loop, he's the guy behind countless apps that are pretty big in the Android community. He is the guy behind the Franco kernel, which maybe is old news at this point, but that was pretty much one of your earlier claims to fame in the Android community. Is that right?
Yes, that's pretty much right. Just let me say thank you for letting me join and maybe help you with an awesome show today.
Yeah, we're excited. So for those who don't know you, what's your story? Where are you from? What have you done in the Android space?
Okay, so I'll try to be brief. I'm from Portugal. I'm 28 years old. I've been working on Android for 8 years, I think, maybe seven. I started out with playing with Linux kernel and recompile it to several phones, trying to cram a better battery for different phones like Nexus 4, Galaxy Nexus, Nexus 5, and so forth. After a while, I started to play with Android apps. And I've built a couple that I'm pretty proud of. One of them is to manage Franco kernel. That's pretty big. And I've been doing other projects since then, like a gallery app, a timer, and a couple more that you can probably find out if you Google me. So it's been a pretty long journey so far because of Android. I've worked abroad in the US. I've been giving talks alone about Android with other folks. It's been awesome, and without the community and the support from everyone else buying my apps and sharing everything that I do, like your blog, for example, always helps when you launch an update or an app and you write about it. Not every blog does that, which is unfortunate, but it always helps, especially in independent developers that don't have like a big team behind you or a big company to give you like a big jump. So that helps. And so I guess thanks to everyone that's been supporting me so far.
Yeah, sure. We just love your apps. And actually, like, I just wanted to mention that because, you know, there's plenty of developers on the Play Store and there's plenty of great apps. You're not the only one, obviously, who's building great apps for Android. And you're not the only one who's an influential developer in the Android space. But I do think you're kind of unique. Well, not entirely unique, but you're kind of unique because one of the things that's really stuck out to me about your work for at least in recent years is that you kind of have this backstory of working with Liam Spradlin, who's now on the design team at Google, previously a writer for Android Police. And, you know, that was kind of his avenue for getting his work out there. And you guys worked together to design some apps that were very, very material design compliant, I guess, which, you know, developing great apps isn't so unique, but at least on the Play Store, you know, there aren't that many apps that are just very, at least in the last few years, like very strictly followed the material design guidelines. And so that's what always has stuck out to me about your apps is that if you're a fan, I mean, a few years ago, if you'd been a fan of the older, you know, older spec of material design and you were looking for apps that really followed that and had that very Google-like experience, you were one of the developers, and you and Liam together were one of the some of the people working on apps that were along those lines. And most recently, you've done a couple that are, you know, they're very simple, but I think useful tools for people. One of them was 5217, which we covered about a year or two ago now. which basically helps you manage your time, taking breaks throughout your workday. And then the other more recent was Gratis, which is basically a very simple tool that you designed for just maintaining and just being grateful with everything in your life. So what has your experience been, you know, like working on those apps and especially like implementing material design in them?
Well, having Liam helping you with the designs was also always a big help. He didn't work with me for Gratis, just for the 50-17 app, but he made all my work very easy because not only he knows the spec from his the top of his head, he gave me all the measurements and all everything that lifts my like a big weight for me, and right. Especially the app, the 50-17, we tried to build a design that was so simple. You just have to click a button and the app does everything for you. You don't have to basically touch anything else. And we played a bit with the layers on top of the system apps. I don't know if you noticed, but the status bar and the navigation bar have like a elevation. So right. It's like the app layer where you see the number with your minutes left for work or for the break. It sits a couple pixels below the system bars. So we played with the different components there as well. Even if you open the options activity, it's different from anything else out there. So that was like an experiment. It wasn't there to make money. It wasn't there to do anything else, either just have fun, like a blank canvas, and just make a great experience. And I think we manage. And I'm very proud about that app. And it works on so many different areas. You can have notifications on your watch. You can receive notifications on your phone normally. You have screensaver support with Daydream. You have sound effects when there's a transition between the work and the break period. We use the LED of your phones, those that support LEDs, to have a different color if you're on the break or on the work period. So we just made a whole experience for users to enjoy. And I'm really happy about that app, and we still talk about that app a lot. And we just use a simple method of a work break methodology, and I think it was pretty awesome. And I use it a lot too. So, and right now we have a web page that uses that layout that we have made by another developer called Jackson. I think that the URL is web.5217.app. It's free. It doesn't have the same features that the Android app does, but you can still have a pretty good experience receiving like browser notifications when there's a different transition than you work and break. And I guess app is everywhere. You can use it wherever you want, and it's a really good experience. About the other app you mentioned, Gratis. That was, I worked on that alone. I basically just wanted to make a very positive and forthcoming experience for anyone, either you're depressed or happy about your life. You can write your thoughts there and you're reminded of them through your notifications or a widget, or I think that's another feature there, but I don't quite remember. But it's based on color, on good transitions, and on top of the material design spec, and it's just a joy to use. And I couldn't be happier working on it. And I'm working on I'm working on a new update that's on top of the new material design guidelines too. It's in beta right now. And I think we'll probably talk about this a little bit on the show, but it's been great.
Yeah. So for those who are kind of out of the loop, Google at I/O basically announced kind of the new spec for material design. They're now kind of pitching it as allowing developers to use this broader framework of material design to, build material design based styles in their apps, but still have the ability and freedom to kind of more incorporate their own branding and their own colors and things like that. So it's basically Google loosening the reins a little bit on material design. That was pretty much why we brought you on. We noticed that you're one of the first developers. I mean, we know that you've been, a dedicated follower of material design in terms of the other apps, but you were one of the first third-party developers to push an app out on the Play Store. It's beta right now, as you mentioned, but Gradus does take advantage of the new look that Google's doing with material theming. And so what was your experience with did you get a chance to use Sketch? Did you get a chance to use the material plugin, or which components did you use? What was your experience there with redesigning the app yourself and no longer having Liam on your side because he's at Google?
I tried the Sketch plugin, but for a developer, I'll be honest, I think it's kind of wasting time a little bit because when I think about the layout, because I have lots of experience and still lots to learn, of course, I just see the XML layout in code. So having to mock it on the different application just doesn't make that much sense to me. For a developer, I just mock it directly on the app itself and I see it on my phone. But I think it's the plugin, it's very helpful for designers, especially. It's easier to mock up layouts because of all the tools they have there. You can build a whole font set automatically. You just choose a font and the thing just builds you the title size and the weight of the font itself. Just builds you a set of different fonts you can use. A designer sends that to the developer, and the developer just has to basically just look at the sheet and just apply it. So for that, I think it's very useful. I think Google has been doing a great job with that tool, and I know the material design team is very invested in that in that plugin. I've read somewhere that they're going to port it to Figma, which is a different application. Sketch to mock and design things, but moving from the Sketch plugin, I think no one else has been implementing these new changes. At least I haven't seen anyone else doing anything for this, besides the case studies they've done on their show design team, and they've published on their website. It's because all the components that they are talking about, they are still in alpha. And most of them, I won't say most of them, but half of the components aren't even implemented in code yet. So even if you include that library, you won't be able to actually use them because they're not implemented. And even the ones that are implemented, they are... some are still testing and some are kind of broken, but so that's why what I've done is look at the spec, read the spec, and just make the components myself, because at the end of the day, they're just views, they're just layouts. Some of the components obviously have some magic behind them, and I haven't done many animations or different features for each of the components. Google usually builds a huge set of different layout options and like helpers for each of the components. So I just built what I think made sense and just applied it. So
yeah, one of the components you used was bottom app bar, right? Which is, I mean, we're seeing that pop up across a lot of Google's apps because it, I mean, that was, so they introduced that component alongside the first developer preview of Android P, I think. And basically it's Google trying to say, it's probably a good idea if we move these navigation menus down to the bottom of the screen for bigger phones. So, yeah, it's good to see that you adopted that one. Do you think that I think it's obvious at this point that's going to be one that we start seeing pop up across not just Google's apps, but a lot of apps, because phones are getting bigger and just makes sense, right?
Well, it makes sense if it makes sense for your app.
Right.
I'm sure I'll still use the app bar at the top if it makes sense. In this specific case on this app, it makes sense because of the main action. It's a big button that lets you create a new post or a new note, which is very important. And it makes sense if that's like anchored at the bottom because it's easier for your thumb to reach. And visually, it strikes you. So, and those two components work well together. And but it doesn't mean that you have to do this for every app. It's just something that's accepted now, and Google suggests you to use if it makes sense. So having that right. that freedom, it's good. But I don't see it as you have to do it every time. Just what makes sense for you, for your app, for your experience of what kind of message you want to send your users. For example, I also made this bottom app bar because I got rid of the navigation drawer and I'm using like a bottom sheet that pops from the bottom instead right. of from the left side or right side if you're left-handed. I think it just makes the whole experience more cohesive and it's easier to find and to use. But again, yeah. That always depends on what type of experience you want your users to have. So don't just follow what everyone else is doing. Use your own head and make sure your users also like it.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, all these components are, you know, I think developers and designers should be thoughtful about where they use them and when they use them and how they use them based on the user experiences that they're trying to build for their users. So that totally makes sense. Although it does seem to be like a trend of Google supporting, this trend, which is that there are bigger phones now. And so, for instance, Google Tasks, I mean, your app, it uses a very similar bottom navigation to Google Tasks. I don't know if you've seen that app. But
I don't remember. Let's see. I'll install it right now.
It's a very similar thing where it's a bottom button for creating a new task. And then, like you said, like this sheet that pops up. And so you're definitely not the first to do this. It's the same exact interface.
And yes, so, it is. It's pretty similar.
Yep. So I think we were talking a little bit before the show about, you know, this Google's guidelines seem a little bit, you know, you said they seem a little green. What did you mean by that? Do you feel like Google has a lot more work to do? And are there any like specific kind of design guidelines or components you think that they're missing or that they need to work on?
No, I think that the spec is solid. I think the spec is awesome. They've made a huge effort to convey the message they want everyone to read much better than before. Before the old guidelines, sometimes some things were a bit ambiguous, and you had to guess a little bit what they wanted you to do, or they had examples that were like magic, and especially regarding motion. So you remember all the those old examples or of the music app, that mock that they've done right, in 2015 right. or some other magical motions, views popping everywhere and moving around. That were it was pretty. But right. when you as a developer see that, you guess like, how do I do that? Because it's not easy. And they didn't have examples for anything. So either you had like insider knowledge or help from someone from those teams, it was pretty much impossible. Or you actually devoted half of your year just teaching yourself the core of the animation framework and stuff. I don't know if you know that there's an app made by from a Googler called Plaid from Nick Butcher. It's like a test case of pretty much the entire material spec guideline, where if you see the code examples of the different motion and animations that he's done, like it's crazy. You don't do that on your app. I mean, re-implementing animations or interpolers and I've talked with him about this a couple of times, and some of the hacks or changes he's done, he had to ask the people from the Android team, like, how do I do this? And some of them, they don't even know. So the old spec was kind of lackluster in terms of examples. And with this update spec, they are making a huge effort to giving you not only the theory, but also examples for you to learn and implement, which are the material components, which is a library they're working on. And that's the green part that I mentioned to you. It's still in alpha. There's still lots to be done. And that's why I implemented some of the things myself, because they aren't ready to use in production. But if you're a developer and you're working on your like spare time on projects, I urge you to integrate the library and try the components, fill bugs if you find bugs, and help them build a better experience for everyone else to use.
Yeah, so I guess from your perspective, just to close this off, with your, you know, you've updated your app. It's taking advantage of material theming and Google's new spec. Do you recommend? I mean, so like yesterday we saw Lyft actually is another example. So Lyft is taking advantage of material theming as well with their completely redesigned app, which they announced yesterday, but they have not actually pushed out. So I'm waiting on that to check it out.
I have something to say about that.
Yeah, what's up?
Those apps that they've announced at I/O that have received like design updates, those are special cases. Those are cases where Google work with them directly, right, as a showcase of the updated material design spec. Without Google working with them directly, I mean really directly, that wasn't actually possible, because those apps are gigantic, and right. you don't make those changes like in a heartbeat. You have to test, you have to measure, especially in apps so big like Lyft, a small change makes a big difference. And if it backfires, well, it's a big problem. And with the power of Google behind them, the material design team, they built a better experience to showcase the changes of the spec. But I wouldn't look up too much on those examples, because I'm sure they are also using either custom components or alpha components. But if like they're working with the Google team, so maybe they help each other a little bit on that side. But I would be careful looking at those examples. They're pretty, but they're probably not finished as well.
Right. Yeah. So basically what you're saying is that there's definitely a lot of they're idealistic, so to speak, and that, you know, it's going to take a lot of work before we see, you know, redesigned apps taking advantage of this new spec that are actually functional and actually make sense, and are actually better than previous designs. you know.
That's my take. I'm not speaking yeah. for Google or Lyft or that's my take. I think as an independent, I mentioned this to someone else a couple of days ago. As a developer, seeing those companies receiving special treatment, that's kind of unfair in my in my point of view. I was happy to see those actual apps being showcased on Google I/O, but as a developer, I'm like, okay, thank you so much for letting everyone else know about this, and now we have to catch up.
Now you need a team of 10 designers so that you can do the same thing.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Or more. Yeah.
Yes, probably more because not just 10. You have the designers. You need the developers from the developer relation team to help you actually implement these things. It's a heavy duty. It's not as easy as it sounds. I'm happy that we can see those examples, but as a developer, I feel kind of I'm envy and kind of frustrated. Oh, now I have to catch up and I think you know what I'm talking about.
Totally. I have to say though that you're doing a great job of holding your own amidst the competition because I mean we brought you on the show because you're one of the first that really dove into using the new components and updated your app to comply with the new design guidelines. So props to you for that. And you don't even, you're not even a designer, you're only a developer. So you're definitely, you're ahead of the game. Thanks for joining us, Francisco. I just wanted to say a big thank you to you, obviously. You can follow Francisco over on Twitter, just Google his or look up his name, Francisco Franco, you'll find his profile. He can be found on the Play Store as well. He's the developer of, you know, these couple apps that we've mentioned, 5217 and Great Greatest. You can find links to download those in the show notes after the show. You should definitely check those out if you want a really good idea of just great implementation of material design. And on Francisco's Twitter profile, you can also find a link to access the beta for Greatest, so you can check out his newly redesigned app. So thanks for joining us, Francisco.
Thank you very much.
All right, next up on Alphabet Scoop, we're going to dive in a little bit to Pixel 3 XL leaks that happened this week. Right, Abner?
Yeah. When it rains, it pours. Last week we got the first occurrence of it, and now we've got live images, which, as you've been pointing out on Twitter with your excellent timeline story of Pixel leaks, this is the earliest we've ever had.
Yeah, it's the earliest real life leak. I mean, I think we've had in previous years like earlier, like maybe tidbits of like specs here and there. This year we definitely got like the first real life image like way earlier. I think I mentioned in my little timeline, the original Pixel leaked for the first time in like a spy shot or whatever in August of 2016, and we didn't even know that it was a Pixel at the time. We were still calling it the HTC Nexus.
Yes.
And then the Pixel 2 XL, the very first real like in the flesh kind of image, also happened in August. So this is pretty early. It's only early June, and we already, you know, we've got the image, the first couple of images that leaked, and then there's also like later yesterday there were like 10 more images or something that from the same guy that showed the phone from every angle. So I mean, if this phone's coming out in October, we're, you know, several months out, and it's all out there. I mean, there's only a few little details that we haven't seen yet.
The only reason I could think of why they would move up from an October release is if they want to actually... Okay, so usually the Pixels, they launch with the .1 version of the Android release. 7.1 for the original Pixel. Actually, no, sorry, 8.1. I think the original, the Pixel 2 launched with Android 8.0, but it got a lot of more features in 8.1. So my one possible idea of why it's happening so early this year is that when Google announces the Android 9.0, they could be out of the gate with the first phone running it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, the other thing is, to me, it seems like maybe there's an advantage to launching before the iPhone. I'm not exactly sure what the internal strategy is on the timeline of pre iPhone, post iPhone, or whatever. But maybe who knows? I mean, so basically, we're basing this speculation off of a probably meaningless and unreliable. So when Future mentioned in their report about the Pixel 3
documents.
Yeah, there was manufacturing or supply chain documents or some kind that mentioned an August or September timeline for launch. So we initially kind of shrugged that off as it might not mean anything. We talked about that last show, but now that we've seen this thing, completely out there, it kind of lends a little bit of
Here's an idea that could be so with the what Google's calling Android Beta 1, Android P Beta 1 at I/O, they were able to launch that beta with so many partner devices. Maybe what they're trying to do this fall is to they launch the Pixels and these other devices get the updates immediately. Imagine how big of a sea change that would be for Google to say that we are on day one of when Android P is available for our devices, it's also available for other people. That could be a really big play on them.
Yeah,
and
for
help
sure.
Cut down on this 6% cynicism.
Yeah, well, actually, Francisco and I talked about that a little bit before the show, and I don't know if you read Owen Wilson's take on this situation, but I think it was really insightful, and it makes a lot of sense. And I wish I had been smart enough to think of it myself, but it really is kind of nonsensical for Apple to be making that comparison in 2018, because Google has completely unbundled all those apps, almost all of its apps, and updates them via the Play Store. And not only that, but they're doing monthly security patches on the Pixel phones at this point, and well, actually on most Android phones. So there's variance in when phones get them and when they don't. But generally speaking, in terms of app updates, which are a big part of what Apple updates with its yearly releases, and with security updates, you actually get those things quicker on Android than you do with those big yearly releases on the iOS side.
Yeah, I agree. Again, people like how Apple can release an update and it's on that first day, everybody has it. But if you really think about it, what other company is releasing software at the scale of Google? They have dozens and maybe 100 different services that at least there's weekly updates for so many things. They're releasing software at scale that I don't think Apple can properly compete with in their cyclical 0.1 updates every few months.
Yeah, for sure. And that's another pain point, is that I think, if people are, if there's a bug, which iOS we know has been relatively riddled with bugs. I mean, that's probably an exaggeration, because iOS public releases are pretty, stable in the industry. If you look at the broader industry, they're probably some of the most stable, but they have been buggier than usual. At least it seems that way for the last, couple years. And so if those bugs happen on an iOS device, you're basically just sitting around waiting for whenever they put out their next point release. And on if there's a bug in any of the Google apps, you can get an update within 24 hours if Google pushes an update.
Yeah, because remember that one bug when they had had to do with time savings and rebooting, and they released it at 10 p.m. on a Friday night. The flaws to Apple's much vaunted release schedule they are there, they are obvious, and it's disingenuous to say the least that like you can put up a big slide on the stage, but who's actually getting new features? Like on balance, I'm pretty sure like Android users and iOS uses of Google Apps, they're getting those benefits at a much faster rate, at a much more meaningful rate at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. But back to the Pixel 3, before we move on to that, and we'll talk a little bit about Android P Developer Preview 3 as well, which also happened this week. But we learned a few little details from this week's, or I guess two, a couple days ago now.
This week.
We learned that, unsurprisingly, probably the most unsurprising news of the leaks was that there's no headphone jack on the Pixel 3 XL. Probably no headphone jack on the Pixel 3 either. And that's just, you know, that's just sticking with the status quo on this one. Mm-hmm. And then the more interesting thing is, I actually mentioned last week, I said probably not on headphone jack for obvious reasons. And I said probably yes on wireless charging. Because I mentioned, you know, Qi is the winner, and I mentioned, you know, the iPhones, you know, has a lot of influence in the industry, more influence than it deserves, in my opinion. But Qi seems like it makes sense. And with this leak, we saw the back of the phone for the very first time, and it looks to me like it's all glass. Which, how do you feel about that?
So yeah, what appears to be going on. Okay, what immediately stuck out to me along with that glass back was that it appears that the glass back and the frame are the same shiny material. So they're obviously not doing like a glass frame around the body.
But right.
Like, some critique has been that it looks exactly like the back of the Pixel 2 XL now, like the design is not too different. But like
right.
This, how seamless the glass is merging with everything, how the transition from the glass shade and then from that to the edge of the screen, it really does look like this is a step up, like in at least material quality and how they've been able to push the design. It may not look visually different, but I think this is a step up, which shows if they've been able to solve how they get wireless charging on their phone.
Yeah, for sure.
And keeping the same design.
Yeah, and it's not exactly unheard of in the industry to stick with a visually similar design. I mean, look at the last three generations of Samsung phones, or four generations, or you know, like the Galaxy Note 8 and the Galaxy Note 9, which we saw leaked this week as well. And so it wouldn't be exactly surprising to see Google do the same. So I think it's likely that the leak is real. It looking the same, like initially it seemed a little bit weird, but I think that it makes sense. And like you said, it is more different than it seems. I think it looks to me like the edges are this like shinier metal, as you mentioned, and it looks a lot like the iPhone X to me. And the build design is probably pretty similar to the iPhone X based on yesterday's leak, in terms of like, you know, it's basically a metal rail around the edges with glass on the front and the back, which is what the iPhone X is. That's what I mean by that. Yeah. I mean, obviously lots of phones do that. It's really interesting to me to see what they did with the finish on the back. So like, I don't know if anyone's used the OnePlus 6, but the OnePlus 6 has this like brushed glass is what I would call it. It's like it's a matte finish on the glass. The white OnePlus 6, I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure on this, but I know the white OnePlus 6, Francisco was actually showing me his right before the show, has this kind of brushed matte glass. Interestingly enough, the OnePlus 6 didn't do wireless charging. So, you know, glass doesn't necessarily equal wireless charging, but so like the top third, well, the Pixel has this like distinct look that we all know, which is the window basically at the top, the shade, which like the last two generations have had metal on the bottom with the glass at the top. the glass was bigger on the first Pixel and then smaller last year. And it looks like this year they're going to stick with the general same aesthetic. You know, they're still doing a shade, but it's really just two different finishes on the glass. So it's like a shiny finish on the top and like a matte finish on the bottom, which it's so whereas the glass shade had a functional purpose, which was to make cellular reception better per Google statement. This doesn't seem to have a functional purpose anymore. I mean, other than making it all glass, gives it would be make wireless charging possible. But yeah, it's purely aesthetic now.
And so like, that's there's the questions about structural, like what happens if it drops, because that's they're hedging a lot on this wireless charging if it does exist with this design, and hopefully, like if it is glass, they do put it in, but. They're balancing a lot. They're being ambitious about what they're trying to do, and that's good on them.
Yeah, good on them, but bad for anyone who drops their phone and has to pay an exorbitant like fee to fix the back glass.
Yeah, hopefully they do something right about that. They do. I don't know if you get a one free fix or something like that. We've seen Google toy with the idea of like advanced service offerings.
Yeah, and they're partnering with uBreak iFix for their in-store or brick-and-mortar store hardware repairs and stuff, and they've been pretty good. So I'm hoping that you know they'll have a decently priced service for those who get unlucky enough to drop this this glass beast.
Yep. So the other thing,
yeah, go ahead.
So the other thing the other detail confirmation we got. Is there are two front-facing cameras for sure, but and on the back of this Pixel 3 XL, there's just one camera. They're sticking with that one-and-done design for the rear lens, relying on software based on what we've seen here.
Yeah, presumably they're relying on software because that's how they do everything. That lines up with Mark Gurman's report, which was that they're sticking with a single camera on the glass. And I think that it's pretty likely that that's the decision that they've made. However, we learned from a tipster that Google also prototyped a version of the Pixel 3 with dual cameras. It makes sense because what'd you say?
You would prototype everything. All these companies, dozens of designs and technologies.
There's probably technologies and designs that they tested on the Pixel 3 that were, you know, ruled out early on that we will never even hear about. Mm-hmm. But a dual camera system makes a lot of sense for them to test because pretty much every phone on the market has a dual camera at this point.
And they've done wonders at one. Just imagine how they could push it with two.
Right. But it looks like, based on further information that we received, that they might actually end up marketing the single camera as like, you know, it's potential that they might market it as like a benefit. Apparently, this tipster told us that there was like this quote of like, all you need is one that was being thrown around internally earlier on. That which apparently like the marketing department got excited about, like that they could take it out, like all you need is one camera. Yeah, I think that's great. Like that sounds genius to me.
Except when you turn over the phone and see there are two cameras. So
yes, that's the problem.
They can be called out on that really quickly.
All you need is one, except on the front. Which most other phones have only one camera on the front. So
yeah.
The marketing slogan would probably backfire.
But we did hear some interesting things about that dual setup on the front.
Yeah, so apparently the dual front-facing cameras, Google's apparent goal with it is to see how people like portrait mode with front-facing cameras using two. I'm not exactly sure. I mean, so like last year, we had front-facing portrait mode with the Pixel 2 with just one camera.
Often so, people think it's better than the iPhones take.
Right. So what do you think is the benefit of doing two? Just improvement on portrait mode that already exists?
I hope. It's honestly a bit disappointing because unless it's not a traditional camera or it's like a depth sensor, like again, my big thing was maybe it's for security for face unlock, which you see in Android P at the biometric API that supports face and iris scanners. That was my big hope, but it appears that they're doing more of consumer feature camera. Like that's the indication that we've gotten so far. It might be used for other things, but at the moment it appears to be like just another boost to the camera prowess of these devices.
Yeah, what's interesting is our tipster did not mention anything about face authentication. So, I mean, not that they're not doing face authentication. Android already has face authentication.
Or that they just need only one to do a good job at it.
Yeah, who knows? And I've mentioned the problem of there's no infrared, so you can't do anything in the dark. But yeah, you're right. It does seem like they're just going to have two regular old cameras on the front. And it seems like the intention, this is all, informed speculation, so we don't know. But it does seem like the goal of it is to just offer really, really good front-facing portrait mode.
It's just which some consumers will love. They like their selfies. They like the Snapchats and whatnot.
Right, right. It's great for consumers, but to me, it's very boring.
Yeah. They have like a marketing justification for it, but again, we hope that that they're doing something more interesting with the technology.
Yeah. So, yeah, like rounding this out, Google Pixel 3 XL is pretty much all out there. There's a few little details that haven't been confirmed. We don't know some of the specs. You know, we've got screen sizes, but not screen resolutions. We've got, we don't know what the battery capacities or what the battery life is. Google's been pushing a lot of battery life improvements lately with Android P, so maybe that's a thing. And then they've also talked a lot about battery life on Android Wear, Wear OS.
Yeah, second time I've done that.
It's
not good.
Yeah, there are a few things that we don't know still, but we know most things. But there is the smaller Pixel 3, which we've not seen leak. So last year, we didn't have a single leak of the larger Pixel 3 or Pixel 2. We had leaks, but we didn't have a real photo of it until obviously the day of the event. So maybe this year it'll flip around and we won't have a real photo of the smaller Pixel. It's interesting because I think the smaller Pixel last year was the one that they were dog fooding a lot internally. Like it was like, if you wanted to dog food the smaller Pixel 3, all you had to be was like a Google employee. Like that's how Pixel 2, sorry. It was like all you had to be was a Google employee and you could dog food the Pixel 2. But not the 2 XL. It seemed like the 2 XL was locked down in comparison. So maybe they flipped it around this year. I don't know. But it's funny to me either way. All right. So next up, we'll close out the show. We're running a little bit over time on that first segment, but we'll close out the show talking about Android P Developer Preview 3, which rolled out this week. It was kind of a surprise, or was it on schedule? I wasn't following that.
I think it was on schedule since this month we're getting 2 developer previews. So compared to last year, this 5 developer previews, 2 of them will be back to back this month, which is very interesting why they're doing that. I guess they're trying to get even more testing in. But yeah, so we first week of the month, we had developer preview 3 come out. So it is officially considered the second beta 2 of Android P. And again, at this stage, developer preview 2 was the big, we announce everything. And we'll start to see more and more refinements as we move forward. One of those big ones, so something that you noticed immediately, was to the recents, the multitasking gestures and whatnot.
Yeah, that was like, I mean, I for some reason a lot of people didn't notice that, but I noticed that immediately. They removed. Yeah, it's subtle. They added. I think the bigger thing is that they added haptic feedback when you open up the multitasking view from the home screen, and to me that just makes it feel so much more right. And also, I'm not 100% on this, but it feels like they reduced the length that you have to drag. Do you agree with that? It feels like they reduced the length you have to drag to open up the app drawer from the home screen.
I definitely feel like I can open, like, I keep making so many mistakes when I open it on DP2. In DP3, I've been seeing less errors, less unintended opens. So they definitely did something.
Yeah, something changed. My experience with DP2 is that, like, you had to basically drag all the way to the top of the screen. And now it seems like you only have to drag like halfway, but it also seems to take into event the velocity of your drag. So there have been cases where I've been trying to drag up to open the app drawer, but I haven't, I guess, not dragged fast enough. And so it just dropped back down and then gave me that haptic feedback and opened up the multitasking screen. But then other times, if I flick up faster, it seems like it goes fine. So I'm not sure what they changed, but that was the most notable change for me. What other things do we see in DP3 besides the official announcements, which were like finalized APIs?
We got the fan favorite, what everybody's been waiting for, 157 new emoji. Honestly, that's why people update, which is a bit sad if you really think about it. Those features gone, relegated for emoji. But anyways, yeah. So again, there was a lot of tweaks, a lot of small, tiny tweaks. We got a new color preview image. We got a clear all button in the recents menu, which is something that people really, really wanted. We now know it's Android. The Android version is officially 9. So Android 9.0, here we come, not 10. I mentioned earlier, but we have this something called a biometric prompt API. So we saw in ASOP how Google has been working on face and iris, native face and iris authentication support in Android. And this appears to be the end result, which is basically it's a standard way for developers to use to call forth a system dialog when they want some sort of password verification. So that should hopefully, it's a broader sign that we're going to see more of these face authentication features in future devices moving forward. But yeah, honestly, this is what we should expect moving forward. Just minor iterations. Mind you, digital well-being is not available yet. That's going to be all these features that help you monitor your usage. They're not available yet, which is interesting because I would think that we would be getting there at this point. Maybe by the end of the month, we'll see something.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Apple actually beat Google to a lot of this digital well-being stuff. Google had a month head start on the announcement, but Apple, and there's still a few things, I think. I'm not sure. I'm not an Apple reporter. But there are still a few things that aren't in the iOS 12 beta. But yeah, I mean, Google hasn't shipped hardly anything on that front. And the iOS 12 beta has a lot of like screen time stuff. And so, yeah, I'm a little bit envious that Apple beat them. So did you have any thoughts on WWDC this week? What was your take? Besides, we talked about the Android slide, which was just stupid, but anything else you have? Any thoughts?
It's a bit of a catch up. I saw Apple was playing catch up to Google, which, like, I think even a few years ago, it had been surprising. So Apple's iOS is notoriously a very basic notification system, has gotten bundling, which is 2 years old now in Android. Good job, guys. Digital health, which, and again, like everybody in the industry was expecting. Augmented reality, they made a very big deal about that. And like, if we want, like, to see direct comparisons between Apple and Google, like AR is a very hot field. The demos were interesting. Did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really get WWDC keynote sometimes. I mean, it's supposed to be a developer conference, right? And I feel like I saw a joke on Twitter. So like, there was the pre-reel video, which was like this. I'm not a fan of Apple humor, but it was like this. This video, it was like, yeah, it was David Attenborough, like Planet Earth, kind of talking about, you know, developers and their natural habitat or whatever. And then the closing video, the was like, you know, sentimental thing about, I forgot what it was, but it was
felt a bit much, honestly.
Yeah, but anyways, like, I was kind of confused because I was like, these developers are probably like really confused because they put bookends on the end of the on the beginning and the end of the keynote that were like all about developers, but everything in the middle, like they didn't talk about APIs, they didn't talk about like they didn't talk about hardly anything that was like developer focused. I mean, they did like a 10-minute demo of an AR Lego set, for goodness sakes, you know. Yeah. Like, I feel like, you know, I mean, obviously WWC is days worth of sessions for the developers to go to, but
and it's like a State of the Union, like right after. But look at Google's comparison. Right. Google found a real balance.
Right. I think they found a good balance. I mean, they talked about slices in Android P. They, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas Apple's, I mean, the demos, I mean, it's funny. This like measure, this app called Measure, they spent like 5-10 minutes demoing an app with a single purpose, and there have been third party competitors on the App Store for like over a year.
I find that super interesting. So like this, the first part is Sherlocking, the first part the cannibalization. It's because actually that's like one move that I really agree with, that I think AR should be owned by these companies rather than third party apps. Like, again, it sounds like that hurts the developer ecosystem. But like, I think AR is important enough that the first consumer introduction needs to be done thoughtfully, that it needs to be done well. So like we've seen with Google, like at Google Lens and like those upcoming Google Maps features, I think that at the end of the day, we need to like see these as a first party initiative compared to just like having third party developers.
Yeah, at the same time, though, it feels like iOS is getting bloated with first-party apps, though.
That is true.
although it is good that you can delete them as of a year or two ago. I forgot which
version. They spent a lot of time on voice memos, which is like, yeah. I don't even know what
the Google I think that was the showcase of Marzipan, really. I think it was like, this is an iOS-first app. We got it running on macOS. It's coming to iPad, and also it's backed up on iCloud. So it was like, it was just an easy way to talk about what they were showcasing.
But on Marzipan, we are seeing another thing that Apple is emulating. It's Android apps coming to Chrome OS, iOS apps coming to Mac OS. That's another similarity.
It's probably a year or two away from being a reality.
Definitely.
Which is so Apple's going to be like 4 years behind Google doing the same thing with Chromebooks. It's an interesting thing because, you know, for a while there were a lot of rumors that, you know, like, I mean, so like there's been that debate between Gruber and Gurman about what Apple's doing with converging or not converging or whatever. And then there was a report from Wall Street Journal a few years ago about Google converging Android and Chrome OS. And you know, they worked on Andromeda for a while, which ended up getting shelved in favor of Fuchsia. And they ended up, you know, really building out Android support in Chrome OS. So it's really been interesting to see both of these companies have had rumors or speculation that iOS and macOS were going to merge and maybe even did testing on it internally or worked on it internally. And then ended up doing the same thing, which was basically putting emulation for mobile apps in their desktop platforms.
I think one of the more interesting finer points in all of this is like with macOS, iOS apps on macOS seem very off. It doesn't seem native. I think the crux of John Gruber's argument is that a direct port of iOS to macOS doesn't fit in the same way that like Android apps on Chrome OS, they work better. Like, they feel slightly different. But like at the end of the day, given how much newer Chrome OS is, like the Android apps on like Chromebooks, they feel fine. They feel like they're somehow related in the same way that Apple and Mac OS is going to. So I think that might be a key advantage in like creating a native platform.
I think one aspect of that is maybe that Apple's first-party UI elements are more commonly used in iOS apps than Google's are, maybe. Or maybe Apple's UI elements for iOS are more mobile-optimized than Google's are. For instance, I mean, one example that comes to mind is, you know, like whenever you're in iOS and you tap like a drop down menu, this bottom thing will like pop up and you can scroll through with your thumb like the different options, and then you tap done. Like that's how you do like a drop down menu in iOS. And then on Android, usually drop down menus are actual drop down menus, and you can just pick from one. A side note is that it seems like part of the reason that Android apps make more sense in Chrome OS than iOS do in Mac OS is that it seems like maybe iOS apps are more touch optimized than Android apps were. And so maybe developers are just going to have to make more changes to make them optimized for Mac OS. That's an interesting point. The last thing I want to talk about regarding WWDC was Siri shortcuts, which, you know, my initial reaction was like, I don't know what to think about Siri shortcuts, because I've seen a few things that are really cool, but I also feel like this is Apple's way of copping out having to do the things that Google's doing with slices and stuff like that. What do you think of?
I think the more there are comparison is Google Assistant routines. Okay, at the end of these days, they're all macros. If you like, that's like the old the desktop equivalent. It's the idea of like programming user act, allowing users to do programmatic actions with simple keywords. So yeah. I think there is a subset of an audience that likes that, like that. They'll understand that. But I'm even with Google's approach with routines, I don't know if it's consumer friendly enough. That I still think like these should be way more automated, that Assistant and Siri should be able to better recognize like what's a frequently repeated task and offer to the user. And that serves as a better introduction of like, here you can make programs. Because right now, like Siri, what is it? Siri Shortcuts, was it? It's its own app. Google Assistant Routines is still quite buried in settings. It's even more buried in settings after recent updates. So it is interesting, like, that both of these companies are moving to this, like pro-consumer. They're trying to get this pro-consumer feature down to regular consumers. So
I think shortcuts feel like a much more finished version of routines to me. Would you say that?
I agree. Yeah,
taking it to the logical conclusion. If you took routines a year from now, that's what shortcuts are today. Basically, that's what it seems like to me. But it really comes down to, I think the reason Google's not focusing on routines, to me, I think it's an ideological difference.
I agree.
So like Google's not focusing on routines. Routines are not like a big deal for Google, because I think Google is focusing it's proactive versus reactive, right? Like Google wants you to not have to even ask, right? Whereas Apple's like, we don't want to be creepy and know everything about you so that you don't have to even ask. So we're going to build out a full-fledged app for you to build it yourself. And you know, that really comes down to, we've talked about this a lot, but it comes down to an ideological difference of respect for privacy and Apple being very conservative about avoiding anything that might come across as creepy to the end user, right? You know, like Siri shortcuts is not creepy at all, because if you like, you have to make it yourself, or you have to be using an app that offers you to add one, right? Whereas that's equivalent to routines, right? You have to go in and you have to make a routine yourself. But Google has no shame with just like, yeah, we know you're about to ask for a Lyft ride, so here's a little slice right now. You can book it right here without even going to the app. And I don't know. I think Google's approach is going to win in the end. And it's going to be interesting to see how Apple competes with or tries to keep up, because I don't know. Like, it's going to be a fundamental divide to me. It's like, there's going to be a divide in smartphone experiences between iOS and Android. It's going to be very different, don't you think? Like booking a Lyft app. Go ahead.
It's funny because you would honestly think these approaches are the other way around. Like that Google would be the one that has a full dedicated app of like these nerdy macros, and Apple would be the one suggesting to users. It's a complete reversal here.
Absolutely.
In this case, I think the simplicity of Google's approach is winning.
Right. No, I think Google's approach, even though it breaks Apple's privacy ideology in some ways, arguably, you know, you can
it's
argue
what's going to be used.
Like, yeah, and I think that's what Apple, I think it's actually, I agree with you. I completely agree with you. I think it's actually more Apple-like, because this is like the Siri Shortcuts app. It stood out to me as being weirdly not Apple. I mean, in a way. So like, it feels like it's a compromise. You know, it's like, I don't think that Apple would do this from an end user experience perspective. Although, you know, you could argue, you know, they have Automator on the Mac, but the Mac's a whole separate, you know, platform, and it's built for productivity. Whereas mobile phones, you know, it doesn't necessarily make sense there. And so it's really interesting to me to see how this is dividing so clearly. You know, Apple's like sticking really hard to their privacy guns, you know, and touting it as a feature. They mentioned it at WWDC like three times. They're shutting down Facebook stuff and Safari, and you know, so like it's just really interesting to me to see how Google's actually doing. Completely agree. It's Google's actually doing the Apple thing in this situation, whereas Apple's doing the not Apple thing because of privacy. And I don't know if the end users are really going to use their Siri Shortcuts app. Do you think they will?
Without heavy pushing, no, I don't. It's just another icon they navigate to. It's complex. Like, it's like a mini app store. And I don't know if like that's like they want another, if they want to, if consumers want to deal with another app store of sorts.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out, and to see if the Siri Shortcuts app, I mean, it was based on Workflow, right? That app that they acquired.
Yes. Yeah, you said like it doesn't feel like app, like new Apple. It isn't. It's a transplant.
Yeah, so that might be part of it too. All right, so I guess we can digress on the WWDC talk and let this Alphabet Scoop podcast end on an Apple note after that brief conversation. Yeah, we'll talk more about Google. We'll be back in Alphabet, back in Google next week. Now that WWDC is behind us, and you know, we might have some more thoughts on what those announcements are going to mean for the Google ecosystem, but we'll try to steer away from Apple as much as we can. Until then, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Friday live here on YouTube, and we publish on podcast platforms every Saturday morning. You can find us on all of your favorite platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, the newly named Google Podcasts, Google Play Music, and you can even listen on our site at 9to5google.com if that's the way you would like to go about it. Thanks for tuning in, as always, and thanks again, Abner and Francisco. I had to have to mention that. Really appreciate Francisco Franco joining us for the first half of this episode, and we'll see you next week.
Yep, cheers.